Hey, listeners, this is Dennis Wisco, your host of Wisco Weekly. You know, oftentimes when I record with guests, I know where the conversation is going, and usually I'm pretty well prepared and I stick to a script. This is one of those episodes that it's not that. Ultimately, I was attempting to understand and share with you all what is the solution to foster trust between customers and automotive dealers. And just to give away the ending, we didn't come up with a solution. And I've been struggling to describe this episode because I usually like to identify a particular educational topic for us to have a conversation around so that you listeners have some actionable insight or you have maybe just a little bit more knowledge about the topic than before. And I think the only reason why I'm struggling to find a proper way to describe this episode is because if you do listen carefully, then you will hear what dealers really think about customers. And you'll hear this from the mind of a dealer principal, and he's certainly not alone in his sentiment. To support their line of thinking, you'll hear the outside influences to a dealership operation that increase speed. And this increase of speed is a contributing factor of prolonging the distrust between customers and dealers in this modern digital era of the retail environment. So then, what is episode 98? Episode 98 went from an interview to simply having an honest discussion about the business of selling cars in today's world. So I hope you enjoy. Before we get to today's episode, one quick announcement. Listeners, do you have a great book to recommend? As a listener of this show, then you're obviously interested in topics related to entrepreneurship, local government, and self-development. So if you have a book, even if it's an audiobook, that would be of value to other like-minded people, like yourself, please send an email to bookpod, that's B-O-O-K-P-O-D, bookpod@wiscoweeklypod.com, and share that book with all of us. Furthermore, if you are on the fence of sending in a book recommendation for fear of mass popularity of that same book, I encourage you to still send in that book recommendation, but maybe just add a little bit on how that book has affected you personally and or professionally. That'd be great. So visit the episode page to learn more about this. And again, you can send an email to bookpod@wiscoweeklypod.com. Now, let's get into the show.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Mabuhay, bienvenidos, vitete, welcome, and welcome to Wisco Weekly. Listeners, thanks for tuning in to another episode. I'm your host, Dennis Wisco, and this is the podcast giving you university education on the automotive and mobility space. Ladies and gentlemen, I am very, very thankful and very, very grateful for today. You know, there was a couple weeks ago, I was at an event and started to slowly see that there were more audience members in the room recording. And now this is like becoming a performance because now there's two additional people that are in the audience. And audience is an interesting word because that's singular and plural. So there are two people here that defines as an audience. This is a live performance now that we are doing here at Wisco Weekly. This is going to be a great episode, a very thought-provoking episode, and hopefully something that we're going to look to change the world on how the ecosystem of cars are bought, sold, how people learn about things. So let's talk about this. Who can you trust when buying a car? This is a very complex question. Certainly, the easy answer, the one that speaks to our monkey brain, is to seek the counsel of our parents. After all, they kept us alive for 18 years, so they have some credibility and they know what's right. So therefore, you trust them implicitly. Another answer would be to trust technology. Examples of trust in technology are visiting websites like Kelly Blue Book, Edmunds, and TrueCar, where they've amassed copious amounts of data points to provide you with a trusted and guided experience. Other examples of trust in technology are to use apps. 70 episodes ago, we discussed an app called Auto Gravity, which you can shop for cars, apply for credit, and know your payment all from your phone before you go visit a dealership. There is a common thread to these trusted sources. They remain agnostic about your purchase. It is ironic to some degree that trust is embedded in sources who don't care about your business versus those who do care about your business. This is the conundrum of automotive retailers, where agnostic sources of car buying are trusted more than the dealer. And let's be honest, both customers and retailers play this game of poker, trying to only disclose tidbits of information so that one player can eventually go all in. Except, as the cliche goes in business, the customer is always right. Here to discuss this crazy game of poker between customers and retailers are a prior guest of Wisco Weekly, Mr. Chuck Schofield, who serves as the VP of Sales and Dealer Development at Auto Gravity, and joining him is Mr. Rinaldi Halim, the dealer principal of Los Angeles Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and CDJR. What's the R?
Ram.
Jesus, how did I forget that? And he's also the managing partner of Downey Nissan and Nissan of Tustin. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show Mr. Schofield and Mr. Halim.
Thank you, Dennis. Good to be back.
It is good to have you back, Chuck. It's been a long time, but we still see each other in varying circles. How are your millennial kids?
One has graduated college. So, knock on wood, we did something correctly. She's living up in the Bay Area and has a job.
Okay. She went to Santa Barbara?
She went to Santa Barbara.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a son who's a junior at San Diego State, mm-hmm. and then a freshman at Saddleback. So we're making progress, slowly but surely.
See, and that's
thanks
why...
Thanks for asking.
And that's why, listeners, we have to listen to parents.
That's
and
right.
Here, and that's why Chuck being on the show here for the second time, it's important for what he has to say. Mr. Rinaldi Halim, this is the first time we are meeting. How are you, sir?
I'm great, thank you.
So you have a very, very interesting background, and we're certainly going to get to some of your background and how you got into this business, but... As typical on Wisco Weekly, I like to kind of find out who Rinaldi is, asking something that is hopefully maybe non-professional and something that's going on in your personal life or just something that is very meaningful to you. So maybe if you can share with us, you know, what are you looking to accomplish with your money that would be most meaningful to you?
I would say to save time, buy some time back, if that's even possible.
Tell me more about that.
It's a perishable good, right? Not any amount of money could ever buy time back. I've spent the last 15 years working abnormal amounts of hours weekly, building my career, building my businesses. And I am now at a point where I'd like to find a way to kind of buy some of that time back and still accomplish some of the same things that I've accomplished in the last 15 years.
And how do you define buying your time back?
Well, I guess that's why I'm here, because as I sit around and I absorb the automotive retail space on a day-to-day basis, and I see the kind of time it takes to sell a car, engage with a customer, deliver one, gas one, register one, make the customer happy, type up the contracts, make the manufacturer happy, it's really, really time-consuming, and I feel like there's got to be a better way. Mm-hmm. I can't say I have it all figured out, but I do want to take some initiative with Auto Gravity and hopefully accomplish something.
Mm-hmm.
That way, others like me and others in the industry can live in a different environment that's more efficient and accomplish the same things I've been able to accomplish.
This environment that you speak of, I feel like it's a bit mysterious here. You know, in the process of buying a car, you mentioned all the different elements where you as a dealer principal have to satisfy so many people, and again, you're looking to buy time back here. What's the motivator for you?
Well, like I said, I think the motivator is just the system just seems broken, mm-hmm. right? And
do you think it'll ever be fixed though? And listeners, my, you know, as we've rattled off all the process of buying a car, you know, think back to the time you did buy a car, from the moment you started online researching all the way till when you actually got the car delivered. You know, that is a few months process, right? So, you know, this is what we're trying to address right now. This entire experience of buying a car, and Rinaldi is championing this the idea of buying, you know, buying an individual's time back. So please share me more about the motivations on your end.
Well, I think that most consumers would buy a car just as quickly as they would buy a shirt from Amazon if it wasn't such a pain in the butt to do it.
You think so?
I think so. Because
I think that's definitely one of the I would almost label it a fallacy, right? Because isn't there still the other side, the fact that this is still a large purchase that you touch and see?
Correct. So there are too many variables, right? Mm. There are too many variables to consider. And what takes so long is you're fact-checking all those variables.
Yes, yes.
Through multiple right. different sources. Like you said, parents, neighbors, somebody that you know, everybody's an expert when it comes to buying a car.
Except right. the dealer yourself, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Except for the dealer. Now, so that's what takes so long.
Now, but you've been dealing with this for how long now? How long have you been in the
15 years.
15 years. So you've been dealing with this. You know this to be true already.
Correct.
And yet it seems like you feel very dispassionately about wanting to do something about this. This is not something that most people would, I would say, almost approach this optimistically, like they're trying to save the world. You're almost taking it to a very, you can almost say agnostic level. As I mentioned earlier, of like, look, it needs to be done. It needs to happen.
Yeah, it needs to be. It needs to be at a level that's independent, non-biased, third party. Like you said, it's got to be away from the dealer. That way, the source is actually more credible, right? Anytime you attach it to the dealer, the customer assumes that the information's there to help and favor the dealer.
Right. And this idea of this can't be handled, or this shouldn't be handled by the dealer, right, this is where you do have companies like AutoGravity and many others that are out there that are providing solutions to customers that would partner with a dealership such as yours. Now, an app like AutoGravity has more trust than an actual dealership does. And there's always been this idea in the dealership world that anytime that a dealership is going to adopt new technology, they want that white labeled. But you do have these third party sources, these third party companies that actually have greater trust with consumers. Is that going to be the way moving forward?
Yeah. So you've touched on something that really was the point of contact with Rinaldi here. This issue of trust, which is at times, you know, really abstract. But you guys said a couple of things that I want to talk about here. Rinaldi talked about time, right? And time is money. And where dealerships are concerned, of course, you know, money matters. It matters for any business. But in a market like today, where it's sort of flat and margins are compressed even more, that issue becomes more pronounced. So you got to take a look at your organization and say, where are we spending our time? And is it productive time? The auto industry is and has been very transactional, and I understand that. But there's this, I think, a hypersensitivity to the transactional aspect of it, and it forgets what you described before, Dennis, is that there is a time frame that customers have when they go on a purchasing journey. It could be 3 months, it could be 1 month, it could be a day. But dealers need to buy today. How do you build trust in those time frames? And we've got some thoughts on that.
And the hypersensitivity, who are the players that are, would you be able to rate the players that are, you know, on a hypersensitive scale?
Yeah, so dealers and OEMs are on 30-day schedules. You need to sell something today. Mm-hmm. So there's a proclivity to think about what's that opportunity right now, or treat everything in front of you as if it needs to happen right now. And that's where the misalignment happens in the buying experience, right? Because people are ready to buy when they're ready to buy, and there's things they need to know in that process. And buying a car isn't something that you necessarily sit down and do in one, you know, chunk of time. It happens over a period of time in a series of events.
Rinaldi, is there a better way?
I think I already see a better way happening, and it's been happening for a while. The auto broker system has been around for a while, and you know, there are a lot of dealerships across the U.S. where there's either one or two individuals that work at the dealership, and they will process 30, 40 transactions mm-hmm. a month. And you got to look at that and think, well, how are they doing that, right? Well, the answer to that's real simple. The broker is already doing all the work for them. And what's that work? That work is this, is validating the numbers, the trade-in value, the interest rate, the term, the monthly payment, the price, the sales tax, license, registration. Somebody's already doing all that mm-hmm. for the dealership. So that's why when you do it in that manner, by the time the customer shows up to the dealership, the dealership's all has to do then is to deliver the vehicle, print the paperwork, and let the customer be on their way.
Now, you know, just to be a bit controversial here, and again, gentlemen, this is just a Let's discussion here. You know, on one hand, the way you're describing it, Rinaldi, this would, I think this speaks more to the dealer buying time back. Where does the customer get their time back? Because the customer still has to interact with one other intermediary, right? And, you know, you would think a customer would just want to go directly to the dealer, right? In a perfect world, the idea is the customer goes directly to the dealer, meets a great salesperson or product specialist, whatever. They say, hey, I saw this car. Oh, I changed my mind, because customers do change their mind when they come on the lot, and they end up getting a car, and an hour later, they have their brand new shiny car. I mean, that would be the ideal scenario. Is what I'm describing accurate in yeah. terms of, you know, buying time, you buying time versus the customer buying time?
The customer, it also works. It works two ways. Okay. It works both ways. The customer would also save time, because most customers don't realize what takes up a lot of time is their distrust in the system, their distrust in the dealership and whoever they're dealing with inside the dealership, right? So
how do we quantify that?
Well, that's where auto gravity comes in.
Yeah, so let me try and jump in here a little bit. What we're really talking about is, back to what I said before, the purpose that a broker serves is really helping in the sales journey. So that sounds like an abstraction, but what does that mean? They currently act on behalf of the customer in terms of educating them, providing the information that's needed without the customer being inundated with emails and phone calls and that sort of thing. So it's a more comforting way to do it. The broker assumes that burden and then comes back to the customer with what in their mind is a more dispassionate, reliable representation of what value is. Mm-hmm. To Rinaldi's point, if it's just coming from the dealer, for whatever reason, circumstance, the way the industry has evolved, people have a tendency to not trust that implicitly. Where the broker industry is concerned, you've got people, you've got facilities, it's not scalable. Technology, in theory, can do that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But what's at the core of that is what brokers do, and that's they engage in a conversation. They ask people, what are you looking for? Why are you looking for it? What's your budget? What can you afford? Is leasing attractive? Do you want to pay cash? All those things. Customers expect to be asked those questions, but it's when those questions are asked that you can actually be helpful. You can not only answer the question, but you can offer helpful recommendations based upon those answers. So you're not just telling a customer the car is priced at 30 grand. You're saying it's priced at 30 grand, and here's some other options based upon what you told me is important to you. Technology can fill that void.
It can't fill the void, although I would almost say too, doesn't that already exist in the dealership model to this day? Aren't sales consultants, you know, now they've changed the title from a salesperson to a sales consultant in order to demonstrate that role?
What I think is difficult, and I want to come back to what Rinaldi said, is time. At any point in time, there's a ton of people interested in buying cars. There's a smaller portion of those folks that are ready to go today or in a week. And again, this industry rewards and incents their players, dealerships, OEMs, to deliver a car today. Mm-hmm. So that puts a premium on those things. So when in fact, there's this pipeline of people that if you paid attention to and you engage them and develop some level of trust and relationship and you were able to track it, and these things were delivered to you when these opportunities were more ripe, and you understood very clearly what path they were on and where they're at in the buying journey. It could be they're ready to go. It could be they have a few more questions. Now a dealer is willing to engage that person, recognizing that up front, because it's a more efficient use of their time and energy. Maybe they won't buy a car that day, mm-hmm. but more of them will. And if they didn't buy a car that day, a lot of them are likely to come back and buy eventually, you know, presuming you do it correctly and it's a right experience. So what we're looking at is this notion of, you know, we're calling it sort of incubating these people that are at various points in the journey and making sure we're delivering relevant and personalized messages to them and recommendations and offers that are commensurate with what we think they're telling them, but not serving it up to the store until it's more fully baked. What does that look like specifically? It's going to vary and we're going to learn over time, but that's when we want to say to Rinaldi, here's 10 people mm-hmm. and here's where they're at. Mm-hmm. These are worthwhile, rather than, hey, Dennis clicked on this car. Here's his phone number and his email address. Have at it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The busy work that goes on. You're familiar with leads and BDCs and that sort of thing. If you've got 500, 1,000 leads a month and, you know, 100 people buy cars, was that the best? It's a question. Was that the best use of your time of those resources?
There's so many priorities that are conflicting, as we've illustrated here, right? The OEM's goals for the dealership, the dealership's commitment to customer service to the actual customer. So there's so many priorities that have to be balanced. Do we need to stop asking the question, will the customer ever trust the dealership?
Yeah, I think it'll eventually evolve one way or another.
Perhaps through this model, or like, what?
Well, I'll tell you this right now. Some auto brokers establishments are so sophisticated these days that they have the same tools that the dealership does when it comes mm-hmm. to deal building and desking, getting to exact payments. A lot of these establishments are also at a point where they have access to Chrome data, which feeds mm-hmm. rates, rebates, residuals, different tiers. So they're doing all the work, right? They're the ones that has the customer's trust, because the customer's perception is that you're my broker, you work for me, I know you're going to do what's right by me, not what's right by the dealer.
Mm-hmm.
So the customer drops their guard, right, and listens to everything that the broker's saying and believes it all, right? Mm-hmm. And eats it all up. So the broker presents the numbers, because the broker has the same tools that I do as a dealer. And the customer says, you know what? If you say that's what it is, then I'll go and do it. Then the broker picks up the phone and calls one of my guys. And my guy says, okay, I'll have the vehicle ready and the paperwork typed up. And your customer can just come and pick it up. That's happening right now.
That's happening right now, but it also is happening at a very compliant level, meaning that you have, you know, as a broker, let's say specifically in California, you have to be a licensed broker in order to conduct this type of business. Now, I can tell you firsthand, though, also that I have done a number of broker-like transactions with dealerships. However, as the model that I tried to prove, which I think I was actually successful, I just didn't do it so long, it's a lot of work, and that is charging the customer and not charging the dealer. So therefore, now you really are on the side of the customer, because now you are really trying to get their deal. Because of the fact that it's regulated, we're limited, aren't we, on how many, you know, of these types of brokers that we can do at scale?
Well, the law just requires that it's disclosed on the 553 contract, that the customer is notified that there's a fee.
Sure, but I guess my point is that nobody can, you know, somebody who actually, there's been lots of turnover in the car business, lots of salespeople who are no longer working in the business, they very well could say, hey, you know what, well, I have 20 friends and family members, and I could broker them a deal right now, but they can't because they have to apply for a license.
Correct.
So is part of a challenge in developing a digital brokering system, the fact that you do have this kind of regulation in place, or does that regulation matter at all?
You know, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to say any names, right? But I think it just, you know, there recently within the last few years, there was a large internet lead generation company that kind of had to figure out that landscape, right? I think it's one of those things where we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Sorry, did you say something?
That was Dennis.
True car.
I think we'll cross that bridge when we get there. And to be quite honest with you, if I got to that point, Chuck, that means Autogravity's
doing some
good things, right? So,
how do we get here, Rinaldi? How do we get to the point where you, as a dealer executive, are kind of going, you know, rethinking to the system that brokering may be the final disruption the car business needs?
Well, what dealers don't like about it is, you know, our margins are already compressed, and these fees are pretty enormous that we end up paying to these brokers. And what we're paying for is a service that validates what we're telling the customers the truth. So trust is expensive. I figured out in this business, it's an expensive thing to buy. So
that's actually an interesting analogy there. Yeah, it's like all the intermediaries in that system between dealer and customer, all those intermediaries, that is the cost of trust.
I have seen so many people as you know, in the 15 years that I've been doing this, grown adults, fully educated, totally understands math, totally understands interest amortization, cap cost reduction, the whole nine yards. A good portion of them will still say, let me call my mom. Mm-hmm. Let me call my cousin. Let me call my uncle.
Now that, I mean,
because they don't trust you.
Well, I mean, maybe, right? I think the other part too, it's also a big purchase. They just want that additional validation from, again, an agnostic source. That's just like, yeah, am I doing the right thing? Yes. Okay, I'll do it. I don't think, maybe there's a bigger portion that there is a distrust for the dealer at that point. But I also think that a big portion is that it's a big decision to spend a lot of money.
So I'll go back to something I mentioned before. I think the way the industry is has operated, has created, the incentives have created bad behaviors that then create friction in this process where consumers then indict dealers, because dealers are sort of the conspicuous end. They're actually delivering cars. We have more than just anecdotal evidence of when you are engaging a consumer on their terms at their point in time in the journey, and you're coordinating what it is that they want with the dealer and delivering that information to the dealer, setting up these appointments, these experiences are largely positive. So I don't think it's dealers and buying cars. I think it's just a misalignment of how that needs to happen and the broader ecosystem having a deeper appreciation for it and managing it a lot differently, right? Again, consumers buy on their timeline. Cars need to be delivered today. That's how they're reported. That's how analysts look at values of these companies, and all of those things matter, and they're all intertwined. So the outcome of that, I think, are misguided judgments that then people come to conclusions that, well, it's about cars or dealers in particular. I don't necessarily buy that. Do people like buying Teslas? I mean, that's the example, you know, you want to throw out. And
right. They're
selling enough of them in California where it doesn't seem to be too painful or unjoyful.
Right. Now, you know, one of the last times we talked, Chuck, there was, you had mentioned that Autogravity provides a concierge type of service. Is this still the case to this day?
Yeah, we do. And it's really a nice, you know, testing ground for us to understand what type of where people are at in the journey, what type of conversations can you develop in an automated way that bring them further down the pipeline, that we can then sort of incubate that information and serve them up to dealers at the proper time. So that's the purpose it serves right now. Having people you know, physical people in a concierge team and growing that and growing that, that doesn't really scale. You need to use analytics and machine learning to understand how to take people by the hand in that journey. And there's you know, entities that are doing that. We're learning a lot just from the people that we have right now, specific to Carbuy.
I mean, and is this the evolution then to this kind of digital brokering system?
We think it's certainly the first few steps. Rinaldi mentioned before, there's a lot of nuance and complexity to car deals. And I think a lot of technology out there today is trying to pinpoint a specific and penny-perfect transaction. And while that's valuable, I think that you're starting at the end and not appreciating what happens at the beginning. And in our experience, what we're really finding is people aren't asking for that in any sort of consequential way. What they want is to know what they want to know when they want to know it. And they understand there's some gray areas. They just want to minimize the cat and mouse game that goes on. So to the extent that we can deliver these folks with integrity and trust to the dealership, and the dealer can fulfill on that engagement, because that's the other important piece. There has to be a commitment on the dealer's end that when that customer data, that payload is delivered and the information is clear, that the right person will understand exactly what's going to happen at the appointed time and deliver on whatever it is the customer was requesting to fulfill. And again, we've got more than anecdotal evidence that when we've pieced that together, it works way more often than not.
I get all this. I love it. I think for right now, perhaps in this moment of time, I'm all for this. How can I help?
Well, I think there's also this misconception that dealers aren't progressive. Dealers are stuck in the old days. That's not the case. I mean, I know plenty of dealers that are progressive. I think most of us these days are progressive, right? There's this also preconceived notion out there that as car dealers today, we have these big giant margins, right? When you sit there and you tell a customer, hey, our margin's down to about 2-3%, they look at you like you're just full of crap.
Mm-hmm.
The customer really thinks that we have thousands and thousands of dollars.
I know this.
The margins in the car, and that's not the case.
Right.
Right. So when we tell them that, they don't believe you.
Right.
When somebody else tells them that, who they trust and believe, they believe that person. On top of that, price is not the only thing there is to discuss. Right. There's, for most customers, payment, monthly payment, down payment, value to trade in. See, the other reason that motivates me to jump on this project is the customer receives way too many conflicting information. They see a manufacturer ad that says such and such model starting at this MSRP. Well, they get to the dealership, by the time you add the floor mats and all the good stuff, it's $7,000 more, right?
The misinterpretation of the cash down you have to put.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they watch a Super Bowl commercial. Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. see a C-Class for, I don't know, $349 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's $59.95 down, and it's a super base model that the manufacturer really doesn't make a whole lot of.
So let's talk about this, because, I mean, this is definitely, is there someone to blame on this chain? You have customers who don't understand. You have dealers who are just, you know, promoting the information given to them by the manufacturer. The manufacturer is the one designing the program. Who's to blame in this non-understanding of how these lease specials work?
Well, I think it's just everybody's contributed, right? I don't think it's a secret that most dealers, especially in the older days, right, weren't exactly the most forthcoming and most transparent group of people. And then when economists and journalists and writers predict SARs that are 17, 18 million, everybody wants their unfair share. So let the games begin, let the competition begin, right? So everybody contributes to this perverse universe of misdirection, misinformation, and
If we presuppose that customers have more trust in third-party apps such as AutoGravity or this next-generation brokering system that you guys are developing, and if that were also the name of the store itself, would you be okay with using the name Autogravity? Let's just say that's what we're talking about here. Autogravity, but it was owned by Rinaldi Halim.
Absolutely. As long as the customer's happy, they're loyal, the employees
See,
are happy.
Chuck, I'm curious on your end too, right? You came from the manufacturer level.
Yeah.
To me, I kind of equate this to sports, where you have the Los Angeles Lakers that plays at Staples Center, and then you also have the Clippers that play at Staples Center. At the end of the day, the fans associate to... you know, to the Lakers and not Staples Center. So therefore, if the facility, if the dealership facility is just a facility itself, and you did have a whatever bigger company, Autogravity, would that was that's how people associate. I mean, I guess quite honestly, this is what CarMax and Carvana, is it not? Right? It's their universal name that they just have a facility that they use. Would automakers go for that? Knowing the fact that it's still the cars that the automakers would actually, you know, that's what people are still buying?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And again, I just reckon back to what I talked about before. I'm not convinced that what caused this issue is the dealers. And I think if the experience is better over time, consumers aren't you know, that's not top of mind.
It's a cultural shift.
Yeah, they just happen to be sort of the conspicuous player in this in the way the industry has evolved. But I understand your point. When you talk about CarMax, Carvana, they're these individual brands, and you know, CarMax is established. It'll be interesting to see over time how Carvana unfolds, but. Until there's material change amongst the players in the ecosystems about how this business should and can work, and then the incentives are more appropriately aligned with how consumers shop and what they're looking for in that experience, we're going to have, you know, we're going to continue to have these challenges. But I think the opportunity now more than ever is just so much more acute. Let me draw an analogy, and I want to come back to what Rinaldi said about progressive stores. If you look at the television industry 10, 15 years ago, there were three networks, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, ultimately what went on those networks were decided by a handful or one person, and it was that person's perception of why people watch TV and what they want to watch. And their experience was relevant to the extent that, you know, you could have data behind it. And so they weren't uninformed, but it narrowed the possibility. Now enter Netflix, enter Amazon Prime. And now you have all of this creativity that has flowed because the consumer had wanted that all along. There just wasn't an entity to enable that to open up. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think where OEMs are concerned, you know, banks and finance companies are concerned. There, I sort of equate where they're at to that as well, because a lot of what happens with franchise stores is a matter of a smaller and smaller group of people who are further and further away from the consumer making some decisions.
Yep. Right.
And listen, that's maybe oversimplifying the problem, because it does take courage when you've got an enormous complex organization that is chock full of logistics. You know, you've got suppliers and you've got shipping and all those things. So perhaps it's not as easy as I'm suggesting, but there's a first step to be able to say, how do you get closer to the market and make decisions with speed and real time that will enable the progressive thinking of dealers? And that's where you can help, because I agree with Rinaldi. They want answers. Nobody is pining for the old days.
Yeah, the dealers are trying. Like I'm always going to go back to trust and perception of the consumer. That's at the end of the day.
Would you explain it? Trust and perception of the consumer?
By the consumer. Of the dealer. Yeah, mm-hmm. Of the dealer. That's what will speed everything up. I mean, maybe we'll call Bezos and ask him if we can change the dealership's name to Amazon CDJR of Los Angeles. Can you imagine? Because I mean, there's so many national brand names that do have the trust and the confidence consumer, right? Like, you know, Amazon being one of them, right? And then you look at like Walmart, right? They get tons of negative press every now and then because of their wage stuff or whatever. But they're still super duper busy.
Right.
Why? Because people assume that's where the best deals are. And 9 out of 10 times, that is the case.
Do you believe that this idea of trust by a customer to a dealer is just it's just a time game? It's the fact that millennials have demonstrated that they are having more trust, excuse me, in the car buying process, and as such,
I think they're having less trust because most millennials watch their parents buy cars the traditional way, and that took like 7 hours. And they remember being in the showroom bored out of their mind, saying, "Can we just get this over with?" So now they have PTSD. Now they don't even want to buy a car. They want to Uber everywhere.
Well, again, I think the whole idea of Ubering everywhere, right? Again, I think this speaks to the generational aspect of all of this. So that you either have a new generation that's coming on board that is not necessarily, you know, depending on a car to be a personal vehicle of theirs. They can just use it as a mode of transportation, which means they can use things like Uber and whatever other systems that are around them. And, you know, also given the fact that at some point when they do need a car, I seem to recall that millennials do have a higher trust of dealerships than the parents before them, even though their parents, you know, may still be cautiously advising them. Certainly by the time these millennials are 60 and they've graduated their kids throughout life, then their kids will be more favorable. So is this a time game, Chuck?
That would be, I suspect, where I'd place my bet. I know that if, generally speaking, technology will force the issue, even if people aren't willing to bring it along. But as the industry continues to learn more about how buyers behave in reality, it's going to change to accommodate that. And Rinaldi mentioned it earlier. I think those paradigms will shift over time. You know, I'd like to see a point in time in the future where, you know, our kids grew up with the internet all the time. They didn't even understand what it was like not having a computer. Well, maybe people will get to a point where they never heard or understood that it was unpleasant to go to a dealership.
That, right? they never heard? Don't you want it the other way around? Don't you want that they heard so many great things?
Well, sure. I'll settle for not understanding that they were even bad to begin with.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, a couple more questions for you guys. And maybe I want to start with this. Rinald, you as a dealer principal then, how would you advise somebody to buy a car?
Just like how you'd buy everything else. I mean, why should it be any different?
Okay.
Right? So my wife hates her washer and dryer. She hates it. She tells me she needs a new one. It's only 6 months old. I don't know. It does something that pisses her off.
Hey, but, not gonna lie, my wife is the same way. Holy cow, these washer dryers are so important to women. No offense, Alex. I hope you don't mind, but I mean, for God's sakes.
Right. Now, a washer and dryer is not a car, right? I don't really give a crap what it looks like. All I want to do is just make my wife happy. So.
Although if you get a cool washer and dryer, it is kind of, it does look like a sports car in your house.
I researched a few, nailed one down, went online, shopped 2-3 different websites, ended up finding one at Best Buy, went in and bought it. That was it. I don't think.
Any interaction by humans when at Best Buy?
Yeah, definitely.
And how was that?
Well, the price is right there.
Right.
I asked a few questions. The gentleman was pretty nice. Told me all the wonderful things I wanted to hear. I believed him because the internet told me the same thing.
You know what the adage? You know what the adage? The adage is of car dealers, right?
We have tons. Well, tons of negative ones.
Well, maybe this one is not as negative. I actually find this to be more comical, and that is, like, you know, or at least anyone who's involved in sales, they're always a sucker for a sale. So that's what it sounded like in this case, right? It's like for you obviously took the responsibility. You made yourself accountable to the fact that, okay, I got to buy my wife a washer, and so let me do the research. Let me look around. I see it. I can afford it. I'll talk. Maybe ask a few questions, last minute questions, and then there you go. You buy it.
See, to me, I think most new car buyers, right, that genuinely like new cars, buying or leasing a new car every 3-4 years, most of us already know what we want.
Mm-hmm.
What color we want it to be, what features it has, what brand, what look. Is it a two-door, four-door truck, CUV, SUV? We already know what we want. So it shouldn't be any different, right? Like, no different than you'd buy anything else.
Chuck.
That's what I say.
So what I would, and I've had people ask me this all the time. Where I try and start with them is, you know, you've got to get down to what I'll call your short list. You know, tell me not only what you're looking for, but why. What economics are you dealing with? And to the extent that those things are concrete in your mind, then start researching with that in mind. I think one of the challenges that we're going to continue to face with technology in the auto space is providing digestible information. You know, you go onto a website and you're looking for a new Ford, and there's 100,000 of them. Is that useful? Is that helpful for you? So what I try and tell people is think about what it is as precisely as you can. And if you're not sure, then investigate, you know, those elements only and just try to narrow it down. Don't rush. And where everybody that talks to me is concerned, I direct them to Auto Gravity right away, of course, but inevitably they're going to want to talk to family, friends, or some other trusted resource. And that goes back to what, you know, where we started this discussion is. Mm-hmm. A technology, a salesperson at the dealership, or your brother can give you the same information, but you don't get comfortable with that number until, and it's the same number unless it comes from your brother. That's how this is going to continue to unfold. But again, to answer your question, I start with, you need to describe it to some level of detail what you want and why, and then we'll work it from there.
You sold Audis, right?
Yes, sir.
Are they the most economical cars on the road?
No, not at all.
Are they the safest car on the road?
I might be biased and say yes.
They're safe, though.
They're what? Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So they're not the most economical car, right?
No.
Why do people buy them? Why did people buy them?
I think when you start talking about the luxury vehicle, you're definitely appealing to the emotion aspect of it.
Correct. Most car buyers don't need a new car. They want to buy a new car.
Yeah, sure. Sure. But are you saying also, would that also apply to used cars? Would that also apply to the Toyota Corollas and the Camrys and the Priuses of the world also?
Well, there's different types of car buyers, right?
Right.
Different motives of right. why. You know, but it's funny to talk to most new vehicle consumers, they'll say, oh, I need a new car. And you ask them what kind of car they're driving right now. It's only 3 years old with 60,000 miles. Do you really need a new car?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. I mean, again, I think this speaks to almost where my habits are sometimes changing, where it's like, I don't know. I mean, I probably will get a new car again, because again, why not? Yeah, it's nice to have, right? But at the same time, I'm slowly becoming a bigger fan of the subscription format, in which I'm very, very curious to see how that's going to affect dealers, because right now I do believe the price of subscribing to a subscription is way too much, and to the point where, again, forget the fact that you need to educate the consumers about this new type of program, but the price makes it, I think, out of market already. So I'd be curious at some point when that price does lower to the point where it's like those subscription formats, how will that change how people buy cars? Do they buy one car, and as part of that, their concierge services is they also get these, you know, loaner cars that they can use for a month at a time, and they can use it as necessary if they need to take a bigger car to go to a trip to Tahoe. So I'd be curious on how that evolves.
Yeah.
But well, gentlemen, thank you very much for being on the show. Have we touched upon everything? Chuck, how can people follow you?
I'm on LinkedIn. They can get me at my email address, which is chuck@autogravity.com.
Rinaldi?
At the park with my daughter, a swimming lesson. No, honestly, I'm...
How old is your daughter?
She's 2. So, I don't really participate in social media or anything like that. I got a lot going on, you know, with the businesses and, you know, personally, you know, trying to raise a our 2-year-old that we're excited about. So,
well, your 2-year-old, and also you're also trying to fight the battle of gaining trust for the entire
That's
industry.
Right.
So good luck to you, sir. You're going to need all of it. My wishes to you, sir.
No kidding.
Well, listeners, I will put at least Chuck's
hopeless,
in for
hopeless romantic.
That's right.
I will put Chuck's.
I'll give you Rinaldi's information if you get a hold of me. How about that?
All right, I'll put Chuck's information on the episode page. A thank you to Rob and Yalissa, who are in the audience, who sat in today. So, listeners, be sure you tune in to another episode of Wisco Weekly as we end every episode. Cheers, prost, l'chaim, kipis, nastravi, salud, kampai, mabruk, tutsins, gambe, yamas, nastarovie. To the customer experience.
Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning in to this episode of Wisco Weekly, and a big thanks to Rinaldi Halim and Chuck Schofield for being on the show. If you enjoyed this episode, then please consider subscribing and following Wisco Weekly on social media. Thanks for tuning in to this week of Wisco Weekly, and we'll be back next week.